Spring has arrived, and with it a fresh bunch of new titles is blooming. Today on the programme we celebrate the first issue of the American version of an iconic French title, plus a new magazine from Melbourne with a very international outlook, and finally the beautiful art totem that is Moon Man magazine, guaranteed to put a spring, if you like, in your step today on the stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, with me, Tom Edwards. Today on the programme, we'll celebrate new titles arriving on newsstands. From big publishers to indies from Australia, our shelves are looking very fresh, verdant this springtime. Similarly fresh, in bloom, here in Studio One, it's The Stack's producer, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, here to talk about some of these new releases and to introduce our first interview. Good to speak with you, Fernando. And there is something spring-like about this selection. New blooms, new beginnings. There was almost a bit of sunshine.
A little bit.
It cracked through the grey sky for about 5 minutes this week. What are you most excited about hearing about this week?
Well, Tom, you know what I'm excited? Because, you know, it's a lot of different types of magazines we have. We have, you know, the very nice, well-crafted indie titles. We have one from Australia, Lindsay, which we're going to hear a bit later. We also have big publishers still believing in print, you know. Title like L'Officiel, which is iconic in France. I think they have more than 90 years of history. And they want to crack the North American market. So they just launched the first issue of their USA edition, and I'm a big fan of the brand. I actually read quite often the Brazilian versions of it. So I think it's quite interesting, and it's quite a big launch, very, very confident, as you can see in the magazine in front of us, 240 pages, good paper. It was quite exciting speaking to Joseph.
Absolutely. Well, shall we take a listen? This is Joseph Akel, editor-in-chief of L'Officiel USA, in conversation with Fernando. Let's listen.
Coming to America was a new endeavor for the family that owns L'Officiel and continues to consistently own it since its inception. And they approached me shortly after I had finished working as the editor for V Magazine. V, of course, is also a very well-known independent publication here in the United States. And the CEO of L'Officiel, Benjamin Aimer, approached me and asked that we initiate a publication in America that was youthful and vibrant, but also importantly had an eye towards the landscape of media today, primarily that we not only focus our attentions on the print arm of L'Officiel, but also very much kept a steady hand on the wheel of driving the digital aspect of the publication.
But it feels to me, Joseph, that it's a very confident launch as well. And it's nice that, you know, of course, you have a lot of investment in digital as well. But, you know, it's a 240 very thick magazine, print title. And, you know, some people say, why would you launch a print title now? But I think there are plenty of reasons. Do you think that's part of kind of their global expansion plans, you know, to have also a very strong English language title?
Yeah, you know, I think to go back to the first point you made about the question, you know, for sure, I was asked many times, why launch a magazine in 2018? And in fact, in my editor's letter, I sort of had an answer that was two parts. One was that in today's climate, particularly in America, but also globally, the need for informed, creative voices is now more needed than ever. And any publication, I think, has a duty to sort of expand the horizons of its readers. In terms of America, you know, it's interesting. If you look at the statistical data, sort of maybe from 2002 to 2016, the number of magazines in circulation has remained relatively the same. So from 2004, it was sort of 7,188. And in 2016, it was 7,216. So it's sort of been a number so that when people sort of offer the conjecture, oh, maybe print is dwindling, the numbers, in fact, speak opposite to that.
Joseph, if you don't mind saying a few things more about the business plan behind L'Officiel USA. For example, how often is it coming out? For example, in terms of circulation? And I know the US is quite is an interesting market. I think it's quite subscription-based, but I don't know what's your case.
Sure. So, you know, for L'Officiel USA, we are bimonthly, so we'll be coming out six times a year. We like to say that we aim to be the most mainstream of the niche publications. And by that, I mean, you know, we want to be commercially successful, but we sort of want to retain our roots in terms of having a voice that is edgy, that is maybe a little bit of subculture, that embraces fashion and celebrity in a way that is unconventional. But at the same time, we want to have a distribution which is nationwide. So, for example, you can pick up a copy of L'Officiel at any Barnes & Noble in America or at a Hudson News distributor at many of the airports throughout the country. Presently, you know, we are aiming to really penetrate not only New York and Los Angeles, but also the heartland. And I think that's very important because I like to think about L'Officiel as bringing a unique international voice to an audience that extends beyond the traditional focus of publications, which is, you know, the big cities on the coasts of America.
Well, that's a fantastic idea. And another thing that's unusual about L'Officiel USA, I mean, it is changing, but you are also covering women and men's fashion in the same title. I think that's quite a cool idea.
Yeah. You know, I think there's sort of two reasons behind that. On a sort of more ideological level, I think a new generation of readers is more open to the fluidity of genders and doesn't necessarily see that same binary division occurring. But I also think it's a trend that's borne out in the fashion world itself, where more and more designers are, in fact, showing their men's and women's collections at the same time. So one only need to look to Gucci, for example, to see that men's and women's collections are shown together. I think this is tied to economic factors, but also I think to factors which I spoke to that say and indicate gender and the presentation of them is sort of no longer or is approaching a point where they are seen together. And I think that's a very interesting trend. Now, I should also just sort of say for L'Officiel USA, the other decision behind that was economic in that I think in men's publishing in particular, the landscape and availability is not as robust as women's. So for me, it made sense to combine both of them. So there was both an ideological and a business motivation for bringing them together.
And of course, Joseph, L'Officiel is a very international title, and I presume you'll be working with editors from other L'Officiels around the world. I was wondering how much of content will you have from the USA, like, you know, from only from L'Officiel USA? How will you divide those type of stories?
That's a great question. You know, I think syndication is an important model that is occurring in publishing today, particularly with larger publishers. So, of course, Condé Nast is also adopting this model and has utilized syndication with its various entities. L'Officiel USA is very much a part of the global L'Officiel family. I speak regularly with the other editors in chief in Paris and Milan, and we often sort of brainstorm ideas for how we can create content that is shared. So, as opposed to, per se, Paris just creating something and then America takes it and translates it, we work together to create a content that has shareable facets to that. So, for example, if we're doing a cover shoot, you know, we ensure that multiple images are taken so that we are not running the same cover as Paris is. For the U.S. publication, it's really important for me to ensure that there is a tone that speaks to our American audience while also retaining the international sort of flavor of L'Officiel. So while there's no specific breakdown in terms of the number of articles that we use per issue, what I like to think of is that we are predominantly a U.S. publication and then working alongside our foreign publishing partners, we share content that will often appear in our respective publications. And that's also true of our website. So I would just sort of say that, you know, L'Officiel is a global web platform as well. And we all create content that's aggregated and shared amongst each other so that we really do have a global distribution network for our writers and our readers.
Joseph, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will want to get a copy of L'Officiel USA. I have issue one here in front of me with a beautiful cover with Lana Del Rey, which I have to say, one of my favorite singers also. But it's a fantastic, fantastic cover. But tell us, is issue two out already? Or
issue two will be out on newsstands on April 24th. I'm very excited about that. And we're already deep at work, both on our third and fourth issues. One is never far away from another deadline. But issue one is very exciting. I think it captures the youthfulness and exuberance of America today, but also one that can speak to an international audience. And Lana was particularly wonderful to work with. I mean, I think really captures the spirit of L'Officiel, photographed by the legendary rock photographer Mick Rock, who, of course, was known for working alongside David Bowie and Lou Reed, among many others.
That was Joseph Akel, editor-in-chief of L'Officiel USA. The first issue is out now, and very nice it is too. Fernando, let's move on. We've got another release. You could hardly miss this next one because, let's be fair, it's big. Tell us how you first came across this one.
I was very curious. It's called a Moon Man magazine, which is made by Moon Man Studios. At first, I was trying to understand the concept of the magazine. But I have to tell you, Tom, one of the most beautiful things, and I think you agree with me, because I think you fall in love a little bit with the magazine, it's how beautiful it is. You know, it's costly. You know, I think it's a major project, very ambitious. But it's just beautiful. Every single page, it's kind of a culture magazine inspired by design, you know. But you kind of have to see it. In a way to understand. And every page, it's detachable as well, so you can do all sorts of things.
It's a fully perforated magazine, so you could take out the pages and put them up on your walls.
Quite exciting.
It certainly caught my eye. It's pretty extraordinary. And I put a number of those points that Faye's raised to its creative director, its editor-in-chief, Anna Peftieva, and I asked her about how she took this first step in a bold 5-issue project.
It was a long dream. One of those fantasies you have as a kid. I used to spend my weekly allowance on magazines. I think it's always been a fantasy of mine. It wasn't until the last couple of years that we formed Moon Man Studios, which is a studio that I founded with my sister here in London, that we started setting deadlines and making decisions and moving this project forward. I got two of my best friends involved, Joseph Gargoyle and Medina Duggar. Joseph is an amazing curator. Medina is an incredible artist, photographer. And it was with the three of us sort of that we set the time scale for this.
It is rather unlike many or any magazines that we featured on the show before. Is it an exhibition on paper? Is it a cultural journey? I mean, what is the one-liner? What's the elevator pitch? Here's your chance.
I think you said it pretty well. The magazine will consist of 5 editions. It's a pop-up project, and I like to think of it as a museum space, and we're slowly revealing the different rooms. So we've just welcomed you to the first area.
The first chamber.
Well, and,
and you're being very sort of mercurial and mysterious about this. So this is edition E, but that doesn't necessarily tell us, we can't conclude what the future editions will be. Will you tell us? All I know is that they're going to all form an extraordinary holistic entity. Is this right?
Well, the magazine was designed with the intention to consider every single point of it. And we already know the end product will have 5 editions on the shelf. It's intended as a collectible. So hopefully people that invest in the first issue will want to follow through and see the rest of the exhibition. So I'm visualizing it as a finished product and what it would look like. And it needs to all make sense. So there's a direction, but we don't want to give too much away because it's like going to see an amazing show and then I tell you how it concludes.
I've tried, listeners. I've been needling away, but Anna won't give away any more information. and tell us about the actual composition, because, of course, there's incredible... I mean, they're freestanding artworks. This is one of my favourites, which I'm going to... Because many of the pages are perforated, isn't it? So that we can actually...
Every single page is
literally
perforated.
Take them onto the walls of your home and your office. But of course, there's great writing and there's interviews with... I was looking at a piece with the show studios people. You know, it's all in here. What's the kind of composition? How would you describe... And was that prescribed? Had you and your team decided, well, we'll have these pieces, we'll have these freestanding artworks, we need copy? Or was that very organic, the way that it kind of took shape?
It was a combination of both. There were a few artists that we had on our mind for quite a long time. I think there was at least a year of floating in the clouds before we decided to really set the deadlines and buckle down. And then it took just under a year to sort of put it together. So we had a list of artists that we worked with or we were familiar with their work. We had a dream list. Some we came across as we were putting this together. There were a lot of events that were popping up at the correct times, such as London Photo and things like that. So we just covered things and then filled in the blocks and ultimately created our dream exhibition.
Absolutely. And tell me a bit then. So Moon Man Studios came first. We're obviously also interested in the publishing models of how these things work in terms of the financing. What's the time frame for the whole five? How is that going to work? Is that set in stone or is that sort of a movable feast as well?
We're hoping to have this concluded within the next 4 years or so.
Okay.
I didn't want to set certain pressures that were unnecessary and that would be persuasions of the sort of exterior world because this is my own personal project. So actually, before we launched this one, we launched a promotional special edition of Moon Man, which we launched at the Venice Biennale in 2017. It was an amazing experience. It was a much, much smaller project. It just consisted of four sheets of paper or so, about A3 size. And that particular project, we had a set deadline. It had to be at the printers by 11 a.m. on Friday, and that was that. And things happened, as they do. We discovered that one of the images that we were using that was fundamental in the entire design of it was no longer available for whatever reason.
You see, this sounds more like the kind of magazine origin stories that I'm familiar with.
And then the article that was featured in the promo was greatly involved with the image that was no longer available. So a lot of rewriting, redesigning had to be done in the final hours. And I remember reflecting on that experience and thinking, I did this to myself. This is our project, our studio, and I decided to take it back to a Frank Ocean philosophy and let it go out when it's ready to go out.
Sure.
And do it properly. And I think it shows in the final product that we didn't cut any corners and we really put a lot of care and attention into trying to present our contributors' work in the best way.
So in that sense, it is a kind of a calling card for you and your team in terms of the sorts of visions you can realise, the complexity of a project that you can deliver on time, as you say. Mm-hmm. And I guess on budget, I don't know. How much were you constrained in that way as well? Because, I mean, these things are not cheap to create, especially when the lifespan is like that. How much of a balancing act, I suppose, has that been?
There was definitely a moment of panic, shock.
Again, this is very standard in the trade, yeah.
Because as I mentioned, the original conversation was to make it a bit more accessible. And so the original budget that we had in our imaginations was left far behind.
Yeah, probably quite early as well.
Yes.
And what about, I mean, here's a sort of a silly question in a way, but who is this for? Who do you want to see buying, reading, sharing, talking about this? It's a celebration, obviously, of so many things in that world of graphic design, and it will delight those connoisseurs. What's the scope in terms of the outreach, the impact you'd like it to have? Do you want it to be something that a lay person will pick up because they'll say, wow, what is this? And then go on the sort of journey of discovery? Is it for a more, I don't know, what's the word, sort of educated audience? Or does it not, I don't know, do you not really worried about that?
Do you know what? I think it functions in the same way as an exhibition does in a museum space. It could be considered as, not to toot my own horn, but let's just say for the argument of this conversation, Tate Modern. Contemporary work mixed with modern work under one roof. And many different people from all corners of the globe will want to come or will be dragged there.
Or maybe they'll just wander in. They'll just wander down
in
that ramp.
Exactly.
And be delighted, maybe surprised. Angered, confused, it doesn't matter.
Maybe.
As long as they're there. No, but that's the raison d'etre, right?
Yes.
It's just as long as they're there.
Exactly. And then some people are blown away and it changes their life and they go to the gift shop and buy everything. And then other people just take back a conversation. I think that's the intention. But every single page in this magazine was designed with the intention to create something that can function without actually needing to read it. And that was inspired from early days of really disengaging with reading and not being inspired to read personally. I had to learn a new language when I was little, so it was a complicated journey for me. And I just found it so boring and blocky and things like that. So taking that experience, and moving it forward, I wanted to create something that would engage those people that aren't necessarily pulled by text. And if it creates this interest and curiosity to engage with it further, then you discover there's more to it. There's always more to it. And every single page is also designed with the inspiration of a postcard. How to single out one body of work from one artist and have that be the representation of their projects. And, you know, so it's a combination of so many different things, and the experiences of ripping out pages from magazines when you were little and feeling your heart rip as the page ripped incorrectly and thinking, no.
Can you tell us about the second iteration, even when that's roughly penciled in, slated, maybe going to appear? Or does the air of mystery and intrigue even
extend that far? We're definitely hoping to have the next edition finished by the end of the year. And that means launched and in stores. And I think that we would like to follow through with our style of perhaps hosting a preview exhibition of the content beforehand. We think it's a really nice way to break up the time frame while the actual publication is in print and completely out of our hands. From the first issue, we have had some exciting interest for collaborations, so we might be exploring that. But the next issue, although the skeleton will remain more or less the same and recognizable to the series, it's going to be very different.
The first issue of Moon Man is out now, and our thanks to Anna for coming in to see us. Let's head down under, Fernando. Obviously, spring very much in the air in London. I always get slightly confused about seasonality once you start heading betwixt and between hemispheres. But what's certainly true, if we alight in Melbourne, is that there's more exciting launches happening.
Exactly. Well, first of all, I have to say Australia and Brazil as well. We're starting our autumn, but you know, we're fairly warm. It feels like spring.
Don't get bogged down in detail.
Exactly.
And the launch that another launch that caught your eye in Melbourne was this launch of Lindsay magazine. Beth Wilkinson behind it. And again, you spoke to her this week.
Yeah, we're talking all about ambitious magazines. I like that, Tom, because it's the kind of magazine that you can read your Chinese horoscope. You can have a profile of Jenny Key in Australia, and you can find what are the largest export in all the single countries in the world. So, you know, there's so many to read on Lindsay. It's a very curious magazine. I would certainly recommend. And you can find out that, you know, the main export in Granada is nutmeg, for example.
Well, exactly. And this was very interesting. And I'm sure this was part of the exercise. I don't know how many that is, but it's up towards a couple of hundred.
Yeah.
Lots of discussion prompted here at Midori House about the list. Some controversial entries. What was your favourite? Nutmeg, that's pretty good. I think there's another one that caught my eye. What was it?
I think cereal is quite nice, like fruits and nuts. But there's, for example, Vatican stamps.
I think this was the strange one. So the biggest export of the Vatican City is postage stamps.
It's crazy, no?
Who knew? The people behind Lindsay magazine knew. Let's hear from Beth Wilkinson. She talked to Fernando earlier in the week, of course. And she named the magazine, Lindsay, for her grandfather, Lindsay James Stanger, from whom she inherited her first analogue camera. Here she is to tell us more.
I launched online about this time last year. And to be honest, I found it really hard in terms of just engaging people. I had done a lot of work on the online side and really had made it this quite special website, and we had all this newly commissioned content, but I guess the thing is there's just so much content and there's so much noise online, as we all know, and I think breaking through that is really hard. So I think it was only about 3 months after, and print was something I always had wanted to do for a long time, but I ended up doing it a lot earlier than what I initially thought, and the response to that was quite amazing. As soon as I said that we were going to switch to print, people were just, I guess the way they received what we were doing was so different. It was all of a sudden, I guess it felt more real or something.
Beth, tell us a bit more about Lindsay. I'm curious about the title and, you know, what is the magazine about for those who didn't have a chance to have a look at it yet?
So the publication is essentially about celebrating different cultures and places around the world. The name itself comes from my grandfather, Lindsay James Danger, and he was someone who was this amazing photographer, like a self-taught photographer, but also someone who was just incredibly curious about the world. So that curiosity comes through all of the pieces and also his love for photography. So the whole magazine is all shot on film, and each piece really hopes to be able to offer the reader an opportunity to really appreciate and understand a different aspect of a different place or culture.
Beth, tell us a bit more about the making of Lindsay. Now, I see that the magazine is printed in the Netherlands, but you're based in Melbourne, so clearly has a very international reach. Do you have also perhaps some sort of business model for the magazine?
I mean, the business model is kind of, at the moment, it's still evolving because we're still young, but we have a little bit of advertising in our first issue. Obviously, we're trying to, you know, make a little bit of money off cover sales as well. I've actually just launched a studio called Oak Park, which is something that I hope to sit alongside Lindsay and be able to like work on lots of other creative projects and work out ways how they can work together. But yeah, I mean, it's an international publication, and it felt really important to me, if I wanted to make a magazine that celebrated different places, that magazine would be accessible to different places. So I'm self-distributing it, but I'm trying to get in as many different countries as possible. So far, we're in 13 different countries, which is really exciting. And I actually just heard back from a retailer in Berlin just yesterday saying that they'd already sold out in the first week of their first order, and they've just put in another order. So that was really exciting to know that, yeah, already over in Germany, there's people that are engaged with the magazine on that level.
That's amazing. And for those that are interested in Lindsay here on the Stack, where can they look out for a copy?
So it's available online. Our website's lindsaymagazine.co, but we've also on there got a full list of all of our stockers. So if they're local and in London, we're at Mag Culture, at Magma, Papersmith, Modern Society and Housemans. But there's also, we've got stockers in the States and across Europe and Asia as well.
But finally, I have to talk about the beautiful cover from issue one here in my hands. It's Jenny Key, and she's she's in between a beautiful garden. Who is Jenny Key, for those who know? I actually didn't know her, but it was a very interesting story about her.
Yeah, so Jenny Key is an Australian fashion designer. She was particularly big in the 80s. Some people may be familiar with the artist Kendone, but she was kind of that era. But she spent actually a lot of time in London in the 60s and was hanging out with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And yeah, so the piece explores, I guess, her time in London, but also her time in Australia. And she's someone that's particularly influenced by the Australian flora and fauna. And you can see there in the cover image, that is her garden in the Blue Mountains in New South Wales, Australia. And it is literally the most spectacular garden with the most spectacular views. There's waratahs everywhere, and she's wearing her own Sturt Desert Pea Knit, another Australian native flower, on her sweater, which is, yeah, she looks beautiful.
Thank you very much indeed to Beth Wilkinson and the team at Lindsay Magazine. Fernando, I started off the programme by saying about a spring in the step. Lots of really positive stories from big players and small ones alike about confidence in print, global ambitions, and real scale to some of these ideas. And obviously at the Stack, we're always very pleased to see that and to hear about that.
Absolutely. I was very happy like producing the show, you know, seeing, you know, because they're all first issues, all the magazines we're talking here. And hopefully by the end of the year, we have second issue, or the third one or fourth. It's very exciting times, Tom.
Absolutely. More power to them. Let's hope they grow with the seasons.
Exactly.
Poetic note on which to close today's programme. That's it for today's Stack. Thanks to Fernando, of course. Thank you, Faye.
You're welcome.
There we go. Thanks to our editors, Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. If you have any comments or queries, write to Fernando. What is your email address, Fernando?
fb@monaco.com. I love emails.
There you go, from the horse's mouth, as we say here in England. That's all for this week's edition of The Stack. My name is Tom Edwards. Until next time, thank you for listening.